friends, welcome back to another episode of What Page Are You On? It me, Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It me, Alice Slater.
It is you. How are you, my friend? Have you recovered from your lurgy?
You know, I am still like low-key sick, but I'm doing much better than I was. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm glad that, you know, we can record today. I felt for you last week when you were on your sick bed. Not you know with what? Rona, but with whatever it is that everybody's getting that isn't Rona.
Yeah, there's obviously, like, something is doing the rounds. I was so sure I had Rona. But no, my PCR was negative. I just have this, like, weakened little immune system that isn't used to doing any fucking work. And, yeah, well, the first sign of trouble, and it was like, shit, guys, we need to just completely freak out. Don't let her do anything. Let's leave her bedridden for a week.
So that's
what I've been doing.
But we're sad, isn't it? We're back and we're better than ever, are we not?
Definitely better than we were. I feel like because I've been ill for so long and I've not really been doing anything, whilst I feel physically better, I'm still quite like brain foggy. So I apologize if I am not like my usual sparkling self in this episode, but we were keen to like record and get back on the old horse.
Yes.
But yeah.
We have lovely listeners who will take you as you are.
Oh, that makes me want to cry. What have you been reading?
So I am currently reading, maybe I mentioned it a couple of weeks ago whenever we last recorded, but I did this Agatha Christie event with Sophie Hannah and Alex Michaelides, and that really like, you know, got me investigating Agatha Christie stuff I have not read before. It even motivated me to finally go and see The Mousetrap, which is something that I've been wanting to do for literally years. But the tickets are quite expensive because it's just like wildly popular, even though it's literally been running for 69 years. Yes, the sex number.
Nice.
Nice. So I finally went to see The Mousetrap a couple of weeks ago because it was as part of London Theatre Week and I could get a nice cheap ticket. And I am now reading a book called Crooked House by Agatha Christie, which is one of her, you know, standard murder mysteries.
I have never read an Agatha Christie book cover to cover, I don't think.
It's so wild. I feel like, I feel like I'm slightly surprised. I don't know. Yeah.
I have quite a few of them. Yeah, I have quite a few. So it's not through, like, lack of desire. I just have never quite managed to, like, sink in. I don't know. I think I feel like maybe I think we maybe talked about this before, but I think I need to like go to one of the like kind of classic beloved favs and start there.
Yeah, instead of try a niche one. Yeah.
So yes. I've got all my bracelets on, so I'm just going to remove those.
So that is what I am reading right now. What are you reading right now?
So I haven't really been up to much. I haven't been able to like do anything but sit on TikTok. But I did read a book called Weird Fucks by Lynn Tillman, which it's like a reissue of a 1980s novella about a woman. It's written in this very kind of dispassionate tone of voice. This woman who's like has various sexual escapades. I read that in like a day. That was fun. And then I was in, before I came down with my lurgy, I was living the high life in Newquay and on a little caravan holiday. And I'd saved some spooky reads for that holiday. So I finally read the Alison Rumfitt novel that's coming out. Tell Me I'm Worthless, that's it. Finally read that, loved it. It's such a wild ride. And I also read something called Things Have Gotten Worse Since We Last Spoke.
Oh, yes,
by Eric LaRocca.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that is, it's so good, so weird. I really enjoyed it. So that's what I've been reading.
I really hope we, you already asked me that.
I'm not well. I can't remember anything that's happening.
It's fine. I'll just continue what I was going to say. I really hope we can get Alison Rumfitt on the pod because I want us to do a whole episode about Tell Me I'm Worthless.
Yeah, I think she's in.
Good.
So yeah, keep your eyes peeled for that.
Because I just feel like it's so wild and I just want people to read it and I want people to talk about it.
That's the thing. It is the kind of book that I really want to talk about. And we need to talk about it off record because I mainly want to talk about like the final third. Like there's so much to discuss, but it just goes there.
but you can't talk about where it goes without spoiling it. So yeah, it's a really fun one. It's the kind of book that once you finish it, you'll want to get in the DMs.
So true. Cool. So tell us your plan for this episode, my little mastermind friend.
Oh, I love being called a little mastermind. That made me feel so happy. Okay, so we have lots of episodes in the pipeline, but they all involved reading, and I have not been reading very much. So we're doing a little book tag, which I came across on YouTube. It was started by Ariel Bissett. She's one of my favorite booktubers. I really recommend you go check out her videos. And it's the end of year book tag, which may feel like it's too early for such a tag, but it's about looking at the final 3 months of the year and like discussing what our reading intentions are and how our year of reading, how we're gonna, you know, finish the year. So I thought it'd be quite fun. It gives us a good opportunity to talk about like some good stuff. Does that sound good?
It sounds good. I'm shocked that you found a tag on YouTube when I thought the only place you live now was TikTok.
I get around. You know,
she gets around.
My visual media.
So I'm gonna open up the little note where we've got the questions. Alice, are there any books you started this year that you need to finish?
I think need is the key word. Like, I don't really mind leaving things unfinished. Like, for example, The Da Vinci Code. I never read the end of that book. I'm going to leave that one right where it is. In fact, I think it's already gone back to whence it came in a book box. But there are two non-fiction books that I've started this year that I'd quite like to finish. One is Unspeakable Acts, which is true tales of crime, murder, deceit, and obsession, which is edited by Sarah Weinman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Another one. Yeah.
And it's just like an anthology of modern true crime writing. I've only read one or two of the essays in that, so I'd quite like to continue with that one.
I've never heard of this, and it sounds right up my grimy little street.
So I don't think it's had a UK publisher. Top tip, if there's ever anything that I want to read that hasn't been published in the UK, and you don't want to buy from Amazon, Blackwells are really good at sourcing international publications. So I order a lot of my American books from Blackwells, including this one. And yeah, what I've read, I've really enjoyed. There's a lot of familiar names on the contents page, so I want to crack through the rest of that. And then also, very slowly, I'm reading a book called Blue Light of the Screen on Horror, Ghosts and God by Claire Cronin, which I'm really enjoying. I read like a couple of pages a day. It's written like vignettes, so that it makes sense to read it that way if you're that way inclined.
Cool.
I hope to finish that by the end of the year as well.
I love this.
What about you, my friend? I feel like you just read from beginning to end.
Well, I do, but interestingly, the one that I would like to cite for this this answer is also a nonfiction book. So I feel like it is, you know, interesting that the two books that we, both of us, have sort of left unfinished are nonfiction. And in my case, it's because it's really long. And even though I'm really enjoying, I think I maybe should have done it on audio. It's Empire of Pain by Patrick Radden Keefe.
That one. She's still going, is she?
Well, no, she's not. She just has not picked it up since I was first reading it. So I read like half of it and then paused to do other stuff and have not returned to it. But it's something that I would really like to return to because I was enjoying it so much. So yeah, it's not like I've just been kind of reading it a bit at a time. I literally just have had, you know, done half of it and left half undone.
I feel like nonfiction is much easier to pick up and put down again. Like, you know, the form naturally lends itself well to being, you know, stopped and started.
True. But yeah, I was really enjoying it. Maybe people listening will already know about it. I've probably already mentioned it, but it's about the Sackler family, who are the architects of the contemporary opioid crisis in America. So yeah, very interesting, very, you know, relevant to a lot of other, I feel like, you know, the opioid crisis crops up in a lot of podcasts and books I read, and it feels like a very present factor in contemporary America. So I would like to finish that because I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, fair play. Fair fucks, pal.
But yeah, maybe I should have done it on audio as I did his first I guess it was his first book. His last book, Say Nothing, I did that on audio.
What was Say Nothing? I have no memory of that.
Say Nothing was about the Troubles. It won quite a lot of prizes and it was very interesting. So yeah, that was how I consumed Say Nothing and I really enjoyed it. And maybe a massive long book like Empire of Pain would also have been good to do on audio.
Yeah, fair play.
Next question.
Do you have an autumnal book to transition into the end of the year?
Well, as I said, I'm reading this Agatha Christie murder mystery, and I feel like that is quite autumnal for reasons
cozy,
I don't fully understand. Yeah,
just like, cozy. It's a cozy vibe.
Yeah, and it, even though it's not a kind of like dark academia, back to school, campus novel, I feel like it does have, like murder mysteries just do have kind of autumnal vibes.
Yeah, you sort of imagine like the kind of, you know, big coated, chilly, like no detective is like prowling around sleuthing with an ice lolly.
Well, a lot of Agatha Christie ones are set in the middle of summer, interestingly, but that's not really the vibe of a murder mystery. It's only her stuff that I feel like is very summery, and it's only a few of them. But yeah, I feel like the vibe, you know, cozy, gathered around the fire, talking about murders. Autumnal.
Yeah. No, I dig that. I definitely dig that. I kind of feel the same way with some of the books that I've picked. Like, so I've already mentioned that moving into the autumn, I read a couple of horror novels. Well, a novella, Things Have Gotten Worse Since We Last Spoke, and Tell Me I'm Worthless. So I have a couple more, which are not strictly autumnal, but they're Halloween-y. So Dead Relatives by Lucy McKnight Hardy. That's coming out soon. She wrote Water Shall Refuse Them. A great little slice of folk horror that came out a few years ago from Dead Ink. And then I've also got The Sister Who Ate Her Brother by Jen Campbell on my little stack, which is a really beautiful hardback children's short story collection of like creepy fairy tales. So I feel like that's quite autumnal.
Cool.
I'm looking forward to reading that. And then also this time of year, and I do think that this is kind of like there's a dark academia vibe, right? That on the one hand, that's often linked to like campus novels. But also I think like a lot of the kind of dark academic vibe is like those kinds of readers gravitate toward classics as well, I think, because it makes them think of like studying English literature at Cambridge or whatever.
Yeah.
Bullshit. So last year I read Washington Irving's The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, which I fucking loved, and Henry James' Turn of the Screw, which I did not love. I found it very verbose and I really struggled to follow it. But I quite enjoyed like reading classics with intention. So I might try and do another one this year. I'm thinking maybe Northanger Abbey or maybe Frankenstein. Haven't decided yet. Not sure. Let me know.
I haven't read either, so I cannot advise. But maybe our friends listening at home will be able to advise better.
If you have strong feelings, either way, let me know. LMK. Frankenstein is specifically because in Bath we visited Mary Shelley's. There's like a Mary Shelley museum. And I was like, I've never fucking read this book, even though it's one of those, like the narrative is so present in pop culture. I know everything that happens in it. I've never actually read the words on the page, so
yeah,
maybe I fancy it.
Well, report back, please.
Will do.
I feel like maybe I would like you to educate, given that you spend so much time on TikTok and also in BookTok and BookTube, I feel like maybe I would benefit from you doing an episode that is like a lecture on dark academia.
We should definitely do a dark academia episode, because I feel like it's something that has been brewing online amongst young people for a couple of years, but it's only really been this year that the term has kind of broken into old lady circles, and I'm really fascinated by it. I think it's really interesting, and I think that'd be a really fun thing to discuss. We'll pencil that one in.
Yes. So next question, is there a new release you're still waiting for?
So aside from the books that we've already mentioned, so Tell Me I'm Worthless, Dead Relatives, Sister Who Ate Her Brother isn't out yet. I'm not sure if there's a few more due out this month. But generally, I just, as we move towards Christmas publishing, like the focus is always going to be like brand authors, celebrity memoirs, like all those like the Billy Big Bulls shit, which just doesn't really speak to me. Like there's a new Lee Child, there's a new Franzen, there's a new J.K. Rowling, like every British comedian that you could possibly imagine, like everyone who's ever been on Taskmaster has some old tat coming out for Christmas. So I feel like this time of year is more when I start to catch up on everything that I've missed already. Like I don't tend to look to bookshops and new releases as much. As I said, apart from, I think, moving into early October, there's quite a few bits coming out from indies that have been kind of saving their more spooky reads for this time of year. But apart from that, I'm not fussed. Nothing that I'm holding my breath for.
Well, I do quite like Jonathan Franzen. That's my, like, secret shame. So I will probably read his new one because, I'm a fan.
Okay, I have a question then, okay? Jonathan Franzen, you're a fan, you've read his work. I've never read a word.
Yeah, I've read all of his books.
So do you think that he deserves the reputation that he has as being like the kind of go-to soft lit boy that we all take the piss out of? Does he actually deserve that?
I mean, I like him. I can kind of understand why he might be someone that you would want to take the piss out of.
But why Franzen and not Jeffrey Gelides?
I don't know. That I do not know.
Do you know what I mean, though? I do kind of wonder that. Like, it's almost like it kind of became a meme opinion.
Yeah, it sort of built momentum.
No, 100%. And, like, I love having a little laugh with the best of people. Like, I think the Jonathan Franzen portobello mushroom on the grill.
Yeah, a classic.
Saying that Patricia Lockwood... I literally cannot believe that that came from her mind. But, you know, I love that. But I do sometimes wonder, like...
Why him, not someone else? Yeah, I really don't know. Yeah, I mean, if anyone has greater insight into this... Also, do bear in mind that, unlike you, almost as soon as I finish a book, I forget the contents of the book. So there may be, like, a load of reasons in his books that he has become a figure of fun. That I have forgotten because I don't retain any information.
Also, yeah, I do think that sometimes as well, though, because as you said that, I thought like, oh, I wonder if it's like the way he physically describes female characters' bodies in his books. Like, but then that has also become something that was quite memeified, like taking examples of men writing women out of context and showing them on Twitter for clicks. Mm. But actually, if you're reading that work for the first time without that energy in your head, then sometimes those descriptions are not that egregious. Like if you're, you know, in context, obviously they can still feel misogynistic, but sometimes that's kind of the point. Like sometimes the characters themselves are a little bit misogynistic. I don't know.
No, I know what you mean. And yeah, in answer to your question, why him? Why not Dave Eggers? Like, I don't know.
Because he's the poster man. I guess Philip Roth gets a little bit of jocular heat as well.
I think with Philip Roth at least there is like a kind of track record of misogyny, whereas with Jonathan Franzen it's just a bit...
Thing is, you know, his books are so chunky, I'm not sure that I'll ever be asked to find out. So yeah, if you have strong Franzen opinions and you're listening, do feel free to DM me, I'm curious.
Let us know.
Is there anything, so are you waiting for anything aside from the books we've already mentioned?
So yeah, Jonathan Franzen, I will definitely read that. But yeah, I feel like maybe, because clearly he ain't gonna quit. So I think maybe we need to start using the date that the annual Richard Osman book comes out as like the last date by which we can expect like any books that we're that interested to read to come out. Do you know what I mean?
Can you believe that we've recorded an episode this year about all-time bestsellers and completely missed by like a month or 2 months the Richard Osman landslide? 144,000 copies in 1 week, in 3 days, in fact.
Yeah, absolutely.
3 days of sales.
And obviously for context, we also have the Sally Rooney coming out the week before, which sold 46,000 copies.
So, and that was a huge number.
And that was like 36,000 copies more than the second best-selling book of that week. So for context, for Sally Rooney, that was enormous. But then to put Sally Rooney in context, Richard Osman has sold three times as many copies in the same amount of time or less.
And just while we're doing numbers, that makes his book... So what was it called now? It's the second Thursday Murder Club book.
The Man Who Died Twice?
Yeah. So that makes it the fourth fastest selling title of all time. Well, sorry, since Nielsen Records began in the 90s. Do you want to know what the other three, the three books that have sold more copies in the first week?
I saw it on Twitter, but tell me anyway.
Okay, so she loves data. Do you know what I mean? Data. I love data. So number one was The Lost Symbol by Dan Brown.
I've never heard those words before in my life.
It's the sequel to Da Vinci.
Yeah, I know, but to me, like, I know Angels and Demons came out before Da Vinci, but to me, Angels and Demons is the sequel to Da Vinci, and The Lost Symbol does not exist in my mind.
Oh my God. Yeah, see, that's where our life experiences, so true. The deviation in our life experiences really shows, because as a bookseller,
I know
the title. So we've got Da Vinci sequel, and that was something like, I don't have the figures in front of me now, but it was over 200,000 copies in the first week. The next highest seller was J.K. Rowling, The Casual Vacancy. Yeah. and then the third fastest seller in its first week was Go Set a Watchman, Harper Lee.
Random.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah. I mean, I cannot tell you the last time I heard anybody talk about that book.
That's the thing. I feel like Go Set a Watchman, there was such a wild campaign behind it. But they had a total, like, there were no proofs. It was a total silent situation. And, yeah, funnily enough, I don't think it was actually very good. So, yeah, it was a tremendous achievement in terms of marketing. But, yeah, who gives a fuck about the actual book? Anyway, yeah, I really enjoyed that that little data set. I feel like if I had to guess what those books were, I probably wouldn't have come up with any of those titles.
No, they have not. They've not really made an impression on me. Interestingly, I went to a town outside of London in the last week and spoke to somebody I know who works in the bookshop there. And I was like, oh, is everybody buying loads of copies of Sally Rooney and loads of copies of Richard Osman? And she was like, only one of those. And I was like, oh, tell me more. And she was like, yeah, we sold X number of copies of the Sally Rooney on the day it came out, which was really big for us. But since then, it's just been nonstop Richard Osman. And no, like, we've got loads of copies of the Sally Rooney that we just know we're not going to sell now, which is interesting.
That's very interesting. And I think what that tells me, because I know where you were.
Yes.
I assume the population of that place is perhaps a little bit older.
Yeah.
Right?
But like, interestingly, she said, and she even said this to me, that bookshop is opposite a branch of Smith's, which is selling the Richard Osman for half price. And she was like, even in spite of that, even in spite of literally being opposite somewhere that they could get it for 50% off, people are still buying it from that bookshop at full price.
That's wild.
And it's advertised prominently in the window. Like, you can be standing in the bookshop, look out the window and see a full window ad for the Richard Osman at 50% off.
That is so wild.
Yeah. So it's not they're scamming anyone. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Will we ever read them? You're an Agatha Christie fan now. Does Richard Osman appeal to you?
I listened to the first one on audio and quite enjoyed it. I can't say I would understand why it's one of the biggest selling books of all time, but I quite enjoyed it. And I really like him, so I do not bear him any ill will.
But that's why it's one of the biggest selling books of all time. I mean, in fact, even still, I guess, like, biggest selling is, like, such a huge thing. But I feel like the first book was very well received. People liked the content, and he is a very beloved public figure. So that title is going to have reached people that maybe wouldn't necessarily be that interested in the book world ordinarily,
I think he has a lot of goodwill as well, and I think he has done what a lot of celebrity authors do not do, and is clearly very interested in books and authors and crime writing and crime reading. Like, even if you watch old episodes of Pointless, if there's ever like a books round, he always talks about how much he loves Patricia Highsmith. Like, he's always kind of, I just feel like he's someone that it doesn't really surprise me that he would be interested in writing a book and that the book could be quite good.
So the big question is, did he write it or is it ghostwritten?
I have 100, like, obviously, please, like, any publishing gossip, tell me if I'm wrong, but it does not surprise me one bit that he could write a novel at all. Like, at all.
Yeah. I would just, kind of assume that he wrote them. I'd love to know. If you know, let me know. Slide into my DMs. I promise I won't tell anyone.
Except for me.
But yeah, apart from you, of course. Okay, enough goss. Let's move on. What are the three books that you would like to read before the end of the year?
So, the three books I would like to read before the end of the year are Transcendent Kingdom by Yaa Gyasi, which I used my Audible credit, which dropped yesterday, to procure.
Excellent. That's gorge.
Book number one. Can't wait to listen to that. I will be listening to it while I make whatever earrings I make next. That will be my faithful companion for my next round of earring making. I would like to read How the One-Armed Sister Sweeps Her House by Cherie Jones, which luckily I got free in my Women's Prize Soiree goodie bag, which is very nice to know that I have that on my horizon. And I would also like to read, and I think I mentioned, you know, when we did our little first line episode?
Yes.
This is not a book that came out this year, I think. I think it came out last year or the year before, but I would like to read Lote by Schola von Reinhold.
Nice.
Those are my must-do TBR pile for the rest of the year. I hadn't quite realised how chunky How the One-Armed Sister Sweeps Her House is, but I will read it nonetheless.
Give it a go.
I think also I've damaged my brain cells because I've just been reading like books that are 100 pages long. And I now perceive any book that is more than 100 pages as very long.
That is weird, isn't it? Especially as like the actual chunkiness of a book does not actually indicate how quickly you'll read it.
So true, bestie.
It's so true. That's a really good list. I am impressed. I like it. I feel like I agree. I also want to read them. I don't know if I'll get through those three before the end of the year, given I have my own list. But they are three books that I'm keen to read, so I'm excited to hear what you think of them.
Would you like to tell me your list?
Yes. So I've got, I've got the entire back of my sofa is where I keep all my proofs. I don't know if I've mentioned this on the pod before, but I have all my proofs lined up on the back of the sofa because I try not to keep proofs. So if I like the book, then I try to remember to buy a finished copy of it if I intend to reread it. If I don't like the book, then I just recycle the proof and that's that. I try not to keep them. If I don't like it enough to buy it, then I don't really want to keep the proof version either. Anyway, some of these have been on the back of my sofa for like a full year. And I kind of am at the point where I feel like I'm probably not that desperate to read them if they're still staring at me, you know, like in September. But I do still want to read all the books that were on our first line challenge. So Voyeur, Night Bitch, Madam. I can't remember what else came up on that one now. I think I might have even read one of them already. Anyway, and then I also, I've got The Dangers of Smoking in Bed by Mariana Enriquez. That's a short story collection. Yes. Her first collection, Things We Lost in the Fire, is very beloved. I just haven't got around to reading any of her work. So yeah, I'm desperate to give those a go. And then also The Transgender Issue by Sean Fay. I really want to read that before the year's out.
Yeah, me too.
Which I have to make a decision because I try not to buy hardbacks because they're expensive and I don't really like keeping them. They take up more space. They're heavy. I've got delicate little doll hands. But I really want to read that fucking book. So I have to decide if I'm going to just commit to the hardback. Will I go digital? Will I go audio? I haven't decided yet, but
I feel like audio could be a good choice for that one.
I assume she reads it.
She does,
which I think would be quite nice. I think she has a lovely voice, so I think I'd enjoy that.
Agree.
Yeah, so that's my little list. And then, yeah, I haven't decided yet if whatever I don't read from my proof shelf, if I'm just going to do a clear out or if I'm going to keep them there and just continue to cycle through. Because every so often it gets too full and I have to, like, weed it. And, like, pass some on or like, bin some. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm I've got a towering pile that I've just reduced down into, like, realistically, what am I actually interested in reading and what can I get rid of? Because I just know that it's not going to happen.
Especially as, like, I really try not to say yes to stuff that I'm not going to read. I only say yes to things that I'm genuinely interested in. But sometimes something turns up and I read the first line or the first page and I just think,
No, this isn't what I was expecting. And so often it's actually like that genre-wise, it's not quite what I expected. Like, so often I feel like books are positioned to be a little bit more sinister than they really are.
I totally know what you mean.
Yeah, it's like, I want to read sinister stuff. If it's not actually sinister, fine. But I probably wouldn't have said yes to it. So, I don't know.
Oh, sorry, I just remembered another one. There's a book called Deep Sniff by...
Oh, the Poppers book.
Yeah, it's Deep Sniff. It's a history...
That's not his surname. Hang on, let me stand up because I can see it.
So it's from Repeater Books, who I really like. It is Adam Smith with a Z.
Yes.
Deep Sniff. It's basically a history of poppers and queer futures. And I just think that's such a, like, cool and interesting way to talk about, like, queer history and queer futures. So I'm excited to read that. I've started it. I think it's really great. And, yeah, I want to try and get that one done before the end of the year as well.
My husband, who does not really express much interest in any of the books that I receive proofs of, or like, you know, he has his own taste. He reads, you know, some of the books I get sent, especially by Influx, but he's explicitly been like, if you get a copy of the Poppers book, I really want to read it.
Oh, so, I'll lend it to him.
Please. He would be delighted.
Yeah. Oh, God love him. Yeah. No, I think it's like a really, really interesting creative kind of area to explore. And Repeater, I just think, are really good. They do 50% off sales really regularly. They're the same publisher that released, what's it called now? The Blue Light of the Screen, the horror nonfiction that I'm reading at the minute.
Cool.
And yeah, I really like him. Yeah, I think they did good shit.
Well, report back if you do read it.
Is there a book that you think could still shock you and become one of your favourite books of the year?
I think there is still, I mean, it wouldn't shock me, but I think there is still hope for Transcendent Kingdom by Yaa Gyasi to be one of my favourite books of the year, given how much I liked Homegoing a few years ago. So, yeah, I wouldn't be shocked.
But... So, okay, that's my beef with this question. And I have not actually, I've just realised I never actually answered it. I just jotted down my critique. Is that I don't understand how I can be shocked by something that I'm thinking could still become a favourite. Like, that's not going to surprise me if I've got a book in my head that I'm like, I feel like that's going
to
be a banger.
I'm looking forward to that, yeah.
Yeah. Not that I want to critique, you know, Ariel and her tag. But yeah, so I don't really have an answer for that one. I don't know. I feel like it's been quite a good reading year for me, though. So yeah. I would be surprised if anything new made it into my top 10, because I already have, like, a top 12.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm sure we'll discuss this in greater detail at the actual end of the year, but I feel like several of the books I thought were going to be, like, my favourite books of the year really disappointed me, but equally, loads of books that I did not expect, or, like, I hadn't even really considered at the beginning of the year, I've really loved, so that's nice.
Yeah, that is true, and I'm already excited to record that episode, because, yeah, I feel like I've had some disappointments, but my God, have the highs been high, you know?
So true. You're right.
Final question.
Have you already started making reading plans for next year?
Here's the thing. I feel like that kind of question is definitely very, like, aimed at kind of, you know, people who gamify their reading, content creators, that kind of thing.
And
so I don't know.
People that are very intimately acquainted with the publishing world and know already, you know, already have a kind of eye on what's coming out next year.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Whereas I just, you know, I always have my Goodreads goal. I always set to be 100 books. I've never read 100 books. I probably never will read 100 books in 1 year, but that's just, you know, it's a good laugh at it just to have a little goal. So that's in place. I want to continue with my hardback buying ban. I love supporting this industry. I spend a huge amount of money on books, but I'd really try to spend my money wisely. And I think, you know, I try to resist buying hardbacks when I know that I'm not going to read the book for weeks or months, or sometimes not until the paperback fucking comes out anyway. So yeah, I want to continue buying with intent and buying, you know, spending my money wisely. But that's not really a reading goal. It's more like of a consumerism goal. And then I suppose next year I'm going to spend my year writing my second book, as well as doing my day job of writing. I'm a copywriter by trade. So I'm certainly envisioning a bit less of a focus on front list next year, because I will be reading around the my subject matter and reading like vibe reading to, you know, keep my writing on track. So no plans, just vibes, I guess, for next year. How about you?
Well, there is a book you'll be reading next year.
Oh, is there now?
It's a little
How can I forget?
Welcome to Your Life by me, Bethany Rutter.
I'm not going to read it.
No, just read the blurb. But no, I don't think so. You know, I'll be reading The Proof of Death of a Bookseller by Alice Slater. But
I hope so.
In terms of things that actually come out next year, friend of the pod, Will Dean, has a new interesting sounding standalone novel. I think it's called The Firstborn, and I'm not sure when it's out. Let me have a look. Because
he did a very exciting little trailer.
He did.
To reveal his title, which I thought was really cool. I've never seen anyone do that before. I'm sure the video is really cute. I loved it.
Yeah, the video was great. I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, it's called The Firstborn. I've got that. And that's out on the 14th of April next year. So
yeah, you know, I feel like September is just too early for me to be that on my 2022 titles. There are a few that I've already read that I'm excited to recommend to people, like New Animal by Ella Baxter, and Julia Armfield has a new book as well, like Our Wives Under the Sea. But yeah, in terms of like my reading plans, I don't know yet. I don't know.
We'll get there when we get there.
Yeah, exactly. No fucking rush.
Yeah, and also because, you know, we do this podcast for our friends listening at home. So to a certain extent, in September, like that information is not that useful.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. I really do try not to like put too much oxygen into front list that's still miles away, because I know that's just kind of frustrating. It's like finding that perfect balance between, it's nice to have books that you're excited about because that's a really fun feeling, but it's also like you want to have books that you're excited about. You don't just want to be exposed to stuff that you can't even get excited about yet because it's still so far away.
So true. But although we just said, you know, too far away, I don't know if she's a friend of the pod, but she's like a Twitter friend. You know, nice Chloe Timms?
Yes!
So she's got her debut out in June next year called The Sea Women, which is coming out from Hodder Studio. And I'm hyped about that. So I just wanted to give that a little shout out because I don't think we've mentioned
exciting.
It before. And she's great.
No, we haven't. It was only announced this week, I think, wasn't it? Or last week. Yeah, but that means also, I mean, Hodder Studio is an imprint of Hodder. So it means that we're technically family.
You are basically sisters.
I like to think, anyway. I'm all okay. I enjoyed this tag. I always think it's quite nice. I personally quite like having just prompts that lead to interesting conversations. So I hope that everyone at home enjoyed this as well.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed this. And I am hyped to read my, you know, the rest, however many more books I'm going to read this year. I'm hyped to read the ones I've already said. And I hope that a few that I've missed this year pop up in my brain and I can read those before the year is out, so that I can do a good little, you know, top 10 or whatever we're doing for the end of the year. And it's been a delight to speak to you. And I'm glad you survived your lurgy.
It's so nice to be reunited.
Yes.
Friends reunited on the pod.
God willing, we'll be reunited in person in the fullness of time.
Oh, I can't bloody wait.
Well, thank you so much for listening, our friends at home, and we will see you next time.
Bye!